This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. If you don't have a vision, you will never achieve it. If you don't dream big dreams, you will never realize them. And if you don't know how to apply what you learn in school to real-world problems, no matter how smart you are, no matter your GPA, you will not be successful. And that is the message that a group of CEOs is spreading as they travel around the country. They're trying to bring students into the real world while also lighting a fire under them and helping them to not only find their passion, but to find it in their work. The Dedication to Community D2C Tour has arrived in Charlotte, and we have several of the participants with us this hour. M. Quentin Williams is an attorney, author, and speaker who has held executive positions with both the NFL and the NBA, and is now chairman and CEO of the Butler Lapper Williams firm and founder of the D2C Tour. Welcome to the program. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, Mike.
You're welcome. And Ronaldo Wynn is a former NFL player who is now outreach director of Game Plan for Life, Inner City and Prison Ministries. That's an organization that he runs for Joe Gibbs. Good morning and welcome to you as well.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
We'll have other people stopping by throughout the program. We're here to talk about this tour, this Dedication to Community tour. You're the founder. What was the impetus for you to start this, Quentin?
Well, I wish I could take full credit for it, but I have a wife who is persistent and yeah, that's something to smile at.
It's the look on your face when you say
Well, it's that persistence that ultimately got me to do this. For over a decade, she thought that I had more to give to society. I was building businesses, and she thought that although I was mentoring kids and teaching, that there was a lot more to do.
So where did she get the idea? What did she see that you didn't see?
She saw that our economy was suffering because society wasn't empowering people to be entrepreneurs. She's an entrepreneur. Just by nature, she's an entrepreneur. So she saw that we had a need for more innovative people, more creativity, more entrepreneurship. And that's where it started. So she said to me, you know what? We need people to know that they can go out there and do whatever they need to do. They can make it happen. Our country was built on that. Mm-hmm. And we need to do something. We need to get your people together, your friends together. You have a lot of high-profile, high-powered, successful people. We need to get them together, put them on panels, and have them tell their stories. It's not a preachy thing. It's let people know what their journeys have been, full of ebbs and flows. How did they do it? And by doing that, it's going to be very relatable. Audiences will be able to see themselves in these very, very successful people.
Yeah, because not every successful person succeeds every time. He fails sometimes. He or she fails. And that's everybody fails.
Everybody fails, and that's a big part of this, to show people that failure is a part of the process.
Now, you use the word entrepreneur and entrepreneurship, and Ronaldo, maybe you consider yourself an entrepreneur. I don't know, but you work for Joe Gibbs, so you're working for somebody. Not everybody is an entrepreneur. Not everybody has that entrepreneurial spirit. A lot of people, most people, are going to end up working for someone else. What's in this message that this group of people, including you, Ronaldo, give to these students that addresses those people who are not going to go out and start their own business?
Well, I look at it, you know, in reference to what Quentin was talking about, to inspire, to impact those by sharing your story. For me, people are given different gifts. My gift, I believe, is to serve. Mm-hmm. I use my platform from the NFL to be able to impact others, but also in serving at Game Plan for Life, being able to use that platform to reach our youth, to be able to inspire, to impact through my story, being an inner city kid myself from the south side of Chicago, overcoming a lot, I didn't get here on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody spoke life into my dream that I didn't even realize I even had. So I just try to be able to pass that torch and be able to try to speak to those youth and say, hey, you can do it, that you can dream big.
You're an example, I'm told, of, because I don't know much about this yet, but I'll find out by the end of the hour. But you're an example of what many people on this panel of CEOs and successful people are, and that is people who came from disadvantaged backgrounds and who made something of themselves despite all of the odds. Is that who you tailor your message to, or is it tailored to everybody? Because there's something to learn about that for everyone.
Right. We have a very diverse group of people who are industry experts for us. And, yes, it's inspirational. And, yes, most of them weren't born with a silver spoon or a golden spoon mm-hmm. in their mouths. But this is tailored to everybody. Everybody. People from all ilks. And when we talk about the entrepreneurial spirit, that's what we are trying to get through to people, that you can have an entrepreneurial spirit even if you work for somebody else. Mm. Because that there's so much more to that spirit than just having your own business.
For instance.
So Ronaldo's a perfect example.
Okay.
He's building something within something. Mm. So the ministries that he brings to Joe Gibbs, the message that he brings to Joe Gibbs' message is an entrepreneurial enterprise within an enterprise. We have a panelist named Ted Reed who is going to be with us on Friday, and he worked for Morgan Stanley, a very large bank. He calls himself an intrapreneur because he's an entrepreneur within a company. He has a business that he's building within an established business environment. And we want to speak to people who are maybe a little risk averse when it comes to going out and putting up a shingle,
mm-hmm.
feel more comfortable working under an umbrella of another enterprise. We want to speak to those people too, because they have to have that entrepreneurial spirit. There's something deep within that allows people to succeed when they have that kind of a spirit. Yeah.
I don't know this because I've never been in the NFL. Both of you have worked for the NFL. In the NFL, as a player, I would think it's difficult to be an entrepreneur. You have to deal with the owner. You have to deal with the coach. You're constantly at the threat of being traded or being fired or whatever. Did you think this way when you were in the NFL as a player? Can you apply these principles as a player? Because it's not just the NFL. If you're working for Bank of America or Wells Fargo or a big law firm, it's the same thing.
Absolutely, and being able to be proactive, talking to many of my NFL brethren that are still playing, it is tough to be able to focus on something else because they always say, don't quit your day job. in the NFL, I don't know if you know, stands for not for long, which Q probably knows that.
Exactly.
I mean, the average career is about 2 years, let's be realistic, but no player ever thinks that he's only going to be in the NFL for 2 years.
Right.
And I believe that's the biggest problem is the transition from the game because it hits you like a ton of bricks. You don't see it. And I remember Gene Upshaw, one of our great executives that Pat has since passed, one thing he would always say is, hey, guys, you got to use it or you'll lose it. And basically what he was saying by that was, hey, you guys have a platform, and if you don't be able to access a lot of these relationships that you have from being on the team, once you're done playing, you don't have that leverage that you once had when you were playing as a current player. But the problem is, it takes so much of your time. That you do have to make a sacrifice. I end up making that sacrifice. I end up doing the first Harvard program that they had. It was time away from my family in the off season, which was pretty short during that time. And then I also ended up shadowing at Joe Gibbs Racing for 10 days and just trying to be able to develop and nurture those relationships that I had an interest in.
A number of the people on these panels that travel the country for you are people from professional sports. What is it about professional athletics or professional athletes that lends itself to the message that you're trying to get across?
Well, professional athletes are just rare breeds. They're special people, and they have a commitment that is unparalleled in their sport. The thing that they're doing now is they're transitioning that into the other parts of business. So it's not just that they're committing to their sport. They're committing to being entrepreneurs. You'll see a lot of athletes who are doing entrepreneurial things now, and they're taking the skill set that they've learned being an athlete since they were 6 years old, and they're transferring it.
Drive, discipline,
commitment, and they're transferring that skill set into the real world. Ronaldo is the perfect example of how that is being done and how relationships, one of our panels, it's about relationships, how relationships form this opportunity.
Your story, your personal story of this rise through the, I guess, the south side of Chicago, which even people outside of Chicago know is a tough area of that city and of the country. Your success overcoming adversity is something that they don't talk about in school. They don't tell you how to do that in school. How did you know how to do it? How did it happen for you? What's your story?
Well, I would say I'm blessed, first of all, but obviously there were some people around me, and that's Q just reiterating what he said. I didn't realize it at the time, but it was about relationships. Mm-hmm. People that I looked up to. Of course, there were gangs going on. There were a lot of other things that were going on in my neighborhood. But again, for me, it was my coach. I did have two parents in the home. My mom was an educator in the Inglewood area for 30 years. But a guy that really inspired me was my coach. And one thing that coaches have, they have an influence on kids, on our youth for generations after generations. Coaches influence more people than 1 year than most people do in a lifetime. So there are some bad coaches out there too, but hopefully those good coaches are really making a great impact like my coach made in my life.
You ended up playing for the Jaguars, the Giants, the Saints, the Redskins twice before leaving the NFL. You have also said that a setback can become your greatest comeback. Is that something you learned as a result of the end of your playing days?
Absolutely. For me, the end doesn't come as you want it to come. And 95% of players, they don't leave the game on their own terms. Yeah. And I was part of that. So my setback was that I thought I got cut by Coach Gibbs. Coach Gibbs fired me on my birthday. And it was devastating because who wants to be cut? Who wants to be rejected saying, hey, you're not good enough? And I really, to be honest, I wanted to go in and give him a piece of my mind.
Right.
But I had my wife there with me, thank God. And she, was a counselor for me during that time. We prayed and I went in and I said, Coach, I appreciate the opportunity. I was hurt. Mm-hmm. I was very emotional. You got the cameras in your face while you're carrying your plastic bag out of the building. But, Coach and I, we had a connection. And from that, I always say I had to be fired to be hired. I would have tried to play forever. But at the end of the day, that door does have to close.
Yeah.
And as I look back, I learned a lot about myself as a person to know that my identity, it wasn't in football. That was just something I did for that time being. And I used those gifts that I've learned to be able to carry me to this next level. But so many guys, they put their whole identity in the game. And I believe that's why it's so tough for a lot of guys to be able to transition out. So programs like what Quentin is doing, I believe, man, would really impact, for me personally, my NFL community and my brothers that are going through a lot of this stuff.
What Quentin is doing is the Dedication to Community Tour, the D2C Tour. We'll talk to some other members of the group that's going to be speaking here in Charlotte, at UNC Charlotte, as we go through the program. And I want to come back at some point and talk about your story, Quentin, because as you have said, the people with your story end up in jail or dead. You ended up in the FBI. Now you're an attorney, a business owner, and you're running this tour. We'll talk about that as well. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and LRC Language Resource Center, providing professional interpreters and translators for spoken and sign languages, including document translation, on-site phone and video interpreting. Details at languagerc.com. And the U.S. National Whitewater Center's Tuck Fest, April 17th through the 19th, featuring more than 35 outdoor competitions, races, demos, and live music through the weekend. Details at tuckfest.com. 5 years ago, President Obama terminated family detention centers created to house undocumented immigrants, but Congress recently allocated millions of dollars to expand them. These places continue to be the focus of controversy and concern, and recently an Elon University law professor and her students went to Texas to provide free legal advice to people there. They share their experiences with us tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, just 4 in 10 taxpayers can reach a real person on the IRS toll-free helpline. Many blame steep congressional budget cuts over the past 5 years. What's behind declining customer service at the IRS?
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking today about success in the face of adversity, things you didn't learn in school that you should learn if you want to be successful in life. It's part of the Dedication to Community Tour, for which or of which M. Quentin Williams is the founder and CEO. He also is an attorney and owner of other businesses, including, I think, a film business in Hollywood. Ronaldo Wynn is with us. He is outreach director for Game Plan for Life with the Joe Gibbs Organization. Quentin, you've made a real success out of yourself. You have a law firm. You have a film production company in California. But as a child, I'm told, you had it pretty rough. You determined that your past would not be your future. But not everybody breaks out of that situation. How did you do it?
As Ronaldo said, I had incredible mentors. At every step of my life, every phase, I had somebody who both literally and figuratively held my hand through that phase and told me what I needed to do. Because when I was going through some of the most formative years of my life in high school, it was at the height of the crack epidemic. I'm a New Yorker, so I was in New York, and my neighborhood was plagued by the crack epidemic. If somebody in my circle wasn't doing crack, they were selling crack. Mm. And so that's the environment I lived in and tried to escape. And I would get up every day saying, I don't want to be one of these statistics. I know where these kids are going. But the only reason why I was able to say that was because I had people whispering in my ear, you don't want to be a statistic.
And you went from a lawless environment into the law, not only as an attorney, but you worked as an undercover FBI agent. And as an undercover agent, you were hanging with the very people that you're talking about in the neighborhoods. I'm just curious. You know that about yourself, that you didn't want to be part of that. You knew that people in that life were either in jail or dead. And here are these, and you've had people whispering in your ear all this time, don't do this, do this. As an undercover agent, were you torn? Because you wanted to whisper in their ear and say, look, I'm really a cop. Don't do this.
It was tough being on the other side of the table, arresting people who were like me. Basically, as a kid and like my friends, it was a very difficult situation that I had to do, and I had to do it for a prolonged period of time, 2.5 years. It was something that taught me a lesson, though. It taught me that, you know, there is redemption, first of all, because some of the people who I put behind bars, they came back and they're doing things for society. They learn their lessons.
Seeing what you saw as a young person, seeing what you saw as an FBI agent, with having to deal with these people, put them in jail, does that in any way fuel your passion for what you do now?
Absolutely. There was a kid who I went to school with. This is one of the things that really fuels me. There was a kid who went to school with me. He was a year after me. He played ball with me, played football with me, and he was a genius. Genius kid. The problem was he was hanging with the wrong people. Mm-hmm. He was selling drugs. He was always coming to school high. But a genius. He was a genius to the point where he wouldn't show up in class. And when he showed up, he was high. And these were college honors classes. And he would end up acing these classes. Incredible brain on him. And I asked somebody a short period ago who played with me in high school, whatever happened to him? What's he doing? And he said, he's in and out, meaning he's in and out of jail. And I thought to myself, So what would he have been if he wasn't hanging with the wrong people? And that told me that I need to be able to surround people with the right people.
The right people.
And that's why the friends I have, all these industry experts are my friends. That's why I bring my friends into these forums to surround these audiences with my friends.
Let's meet one of your other friends. We're joined now by Eve Wright, formerly Vice President, Associate General Counsel for the Miami Heat and the American Airlines Arena. She is now a board director and member of the Budget and Audit Committees for USA Track and Field. They better keep things straight there. She's also the author of Life at the Speed of Passion, Create a Life of Intention, Purpose, and Integrity. And she joins us by phone from Durham. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the program. We've heard the backgrounds of these two gentlemen here, Rinaldo and Quentin. What's yours? How did you get where you are today?
Oh, my gosh. A lot of help. I have to echo the sentiments of these guys. So you spoke a little bit about what I've done, but just kind of overview. I'm currently the Senior Vice President of U.S. Sports Marketing for an Australian media company here in the U.S. I was, you know, with the Miami Heat for nearly 8 years. I was in professional golf prior to that for almost 6 years, and then at a law firm before that. And so all of that really has been the benefit of having learned from other people's experiences, learning from their generosity of their time and information, and really just acting on that. And with some luck thrown in there. Really to echo the sentiments of Q and the other guests is we've been very fortunate to have some mentors and some people in my life who have helped guide me to make the best decisions and to really kind of take advantage of those things.
Your book, which is called Life at the Speed of Passion, is about life, about passion and intention and purpose and integrity. How do all those elements come together, and how do they come together for you?
Everything kind of relates to everything else, right? So in the book, we talk about integrity, but I also talk about calculated risk-taking, really identifying what it is you want to do as opposed to what other folks think you ought to be doing, and then going about how to incorporate that in your life. And sometimes, depending on what phase of life you're in, you can't just drop everything and move to California and say, "Hey, I'm setting up a surf shop on the beach." But really, kind of talking about ways that I've been able to, but also using similar to Q, people who I admire and who happen to be friends of mine, their journeys to illustrate these different points and how, you know. A friend of mine who is a lawyer at IBM has a jazz band and has toured around the world a couple of different times while she's still a full-time lawyer. So it really trying to figure out what your passion is and figure out a way to live that and incorporate that into your everyday life.
I had a question about risk because you talk, as you say, about risk in the book, how to calculate and achieve a return on the investment of that risk. I was going to ask you if it's easier to take risks when you're at the bottom and you don't have a lot to lose, or is it easier after you've achieved something and you have some not only monetary capital but social capital? Where is it easier to do that?
So look, I think that's a double-edged sword a little bit, right? So when you're at the bottom and you don't have anything, like when we're just starting out, I think it's easier conceptually to take the risk because you don't have anything to lose except your rent money or your your grocery money and those sorts of things, those real tangible essential things that kind of would inhibit you from taking that risk. On the other end, where you might have a little bit of money and a little bit of social capital, do you stand then to lose that status or that comfort level that you've achieved by taking a risk, because you could wind up with nothing? I think all in all, there's risk all around. I don't think we ever eliminate that in life. It's just how do you figure out which opportunities to pursue and how much of that capital, either way, whether at the low end or the high end, can you personally feel comfortable, or maybe if it's a little outside of your comfort zone, live with taking to achieve something better.
Well, let me throw another wrench into that calculation, if that's the right term, another variable into that calculation. Mm-hmm. If you're talking to young people who, like Quentin and Rinaldo, maybe came from backgrounds where they were surrounded by at-risk people, who are selling crack in some cases to make money and to try to get rich and try to scam the system because they had no other options. When you're an at-risk person, is taking risk a big deal? You're already taking risk. Can you take that kind of a personality and move them into an area where taking a risk is a good thing, not a bad thing?
I tend to think some of it is about perspective, right? They already have some essential elements necessary to be successful. Mm-hmm. You're already pretty smart because you can't be a dumb drug dealer and stay in business
not for long
or alive for long. So you're already pretty smart, right? You already have a sense of taking calculated risk in order to earn something, a return at the end. So to me, you're more than halfway there. The other part, I think, is about perspective and support, understanding that there are other options to which you can apply that same skill set and be successful and maintain that level of success and continue to grow. Whereas on the other end, the odds aren't so good.
Yeah.
Either by jail or death. So I think it's great that Q has this initiative going to D2C because we can show them there are other options that you can pursue and still be wildly successful.
You want to jump in here, Quinn?
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with who's surrounding you to allow you to inform you about those risks and allowing you to weigh those risks properly because a drug dealer is taking the highest risk possible. There's no chance that they're going to get beyond 25 years of age without having something bad happen, probably.
Well, most of them don't believe they're going to live that long.
And that's why having the right people around you to tell you, you have a long life ahead of you, let's do it the right way.
We're going to talk in the next segment about what you do for Joe Gibbs and what this ministry is all about that you run. But you deal with these people all the time. What do you say to them about risk, Rinaldo?
Well, hopefully, like Q talked about, you know, being redeemed, and that basically says that, hey, you have a second chance. A lot of these guys that are in prison or jail, obviously there are some guys that have life sentences, but they can have a second chance and be able to impact those that are coming in there and still make a difference. And I think the one thing that I've always seen is, first of all, there aren't any fathers maybe that they've grown up with, that mentors that were around, as he talked about. And I always talk to kids about, you know, even before, like sometimes the detention centers, juvenile detention centers, Stonewall Jackson, talking to those kids about, you know, it is your association. You know, I really believe that, you know, your association will dictate your destination. And that pretty much just says the people that you hang around, the people that you look up to, if they're not the right people, you're going to be like those people.
Right.
And you're going to find yourself in that same predicament.
This is only a part of what is discussed in this Dedication to Community tour by CEOs. There's another piece of this that we need to talk about, and Eve Wright, I think, is the perfect person to talk about this. You're a lawyer. You obviously enjoy what you do. Quentin's an attorney as well. But I've heard from a lot of lawyers who hate what they do. They don't like being a lawyer because they find out that what they thought the job was going to be is not what it in fact is. And that's not unique to people in the profession of law. It's in all professions, and it's something they don't really teach you in school. If you enroll in a major, they're all about that major and making it. They don't necessarily step back and say, there are going to be some road bumps along the way, and it may not turn out the way you think, because they don't want young people to be discouraged at the start. So how do you avoid making that mistake, Eve? I mean, how do you gain insight to the end results of the decisions you're making now so that they are what you hope they'll be?
Well, okay, so disclaimer, I'm sort of a recovering lawyer, so over marketing. I do still do some legal work. But no, look, my legal career has largely been in sports, so, you know, that's somewhat of a charmed life. But I've been on that other end where you're in a law firm and you're like, oh, my gosh, this is not what I thought it would be. And what I advise people and talk to not only just, you know, aspiring lawyers, but anyone to say, you know, you got to really do some digging. When people say, oh, I want to be a lawyer, they ask a lawyer, what is it like? They say, oh, it's a noble profession, which is fantastic, but that doesn't tell you what you do every day. what kind of hours do you log? What kind of work do you do? Are you sitting at the desk? Are you talking to people? Are you out in the street? Are you in an office? You know, those sorts of things, I think you have to individually be, one, honest with yourself about what fits best fits your personality, right? I may not want to be in an office every day. I might like being outside.
So how do you gain insights? But how do you gain insights into what that might be? You're talking to college students on this
right.
tour.
Right, so one, be honest with yourself about what you like to do. What you like to do, and then frame it on that. I have a friend who said to her she liked watching TV. She ended up working for a network, being a lawyer for a network, because her whole thing was she liked watching TV, and so part of her job was obviously scrutinizing some of the content and all that sort of thing, but that's how she, and she was perfectly happy doing that. I think you have to figure out what makes you happy or what you like to do first, and that could change, but let's start there. The second piece is ask real questions. Seek out people. And sometimes you don't have access to people, like Q is doing this D2C, because folks really don't have access to people. My recommendation is to reach out to them. We have great utilities now on the internet, LinkedIn, where you can send people notes. I get a ton of notes. Some of them I'm able to answer. Some of them I'm not. But you never know. Nothing beats a try for but a failure, and it costs you nothing to do that. Or to work through your alumni connections to try to, you know, the alumni office to try to even set up a phone interview with these folks, informational. I just want to know, realistically, what's your day like? I know it's a noble profession. I know, you know, lawyers seem to be pretty prominent in the community, but what do you do? Like, from 8 a.m. to 12 a.m., what do you do? And then as you start to pick apart what it is their everyday life might look like, honestly, then you can apply it to your own to say, this may fit me, my personality, what I'm interested in doing, or it may not. I think we'd have a lot less recovering lawyers and recovering other folks if we did that.
I don't want to run out of time.
I
want to run out of time before I ask you this question, because you have said that the life we want when we're setting out is not something that will merely fall into our laps. You have to look ahead, plan ahead, have a strategy to achieve your goals. And you also talk about key elements to that strategy, among them cutting out the emotional fat from your life. What does that mean?
Oh, my goodness. I think we all have a little bit of it. We don't call it the same thing, but it's making excuses. Well, I can't do this because if I had enough time in the day, or if I had a personal trainer, $1 million, or those sorts of things, and certainly more resources, more time, more assets, they could help our journey, but it doesn't necessarily prevent us from being able to pursue what we're interested in. And that, again, doesn't mean you can do it whole hog and turn away and quit your job and drop everything. But certainly there are small steps, small things we can do toward reaching what our goal is or our intermediate goals are to get us in a place where we want to be. And it doesn't always turn out. Look, you know, you have a plan. Sometimes the plan works. Sometimes they don't. But at least you're working towards something in order to say, I like it or I don't. Let me try something new.
Okay. Eve Wright, you can find out more about that strategy in the book she's written, Life at the Speed of Passion, Create a Life of Intention, Purpose, and Integrity. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, guys, for letting me share on your show.
My pleasure.
You're welcome. She's part of the Dedication to Community Tour, the D2C Tour, which is coming to UNC Charlotte. We'll talk about why UNC Charlotte is sponsoring all of this, who they hope to reach through this, and we'll talk some more about the personal stories of our other two guests, Quentin Williams and Ronaldo Wynn, when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and An Evening with David Sedaris, celebrating his latest title, Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls. Sedaris visits Belk Theater April 20th for an evening of all-new readings and recollections. Tickets at blumenthalarts.org. And the historic Green Park Inn in Blowing Rock, listed on the National Historic Register, presenting a Downton Abbey-themed five-course dinner, cocktail hour, and music, Saturday, April 18th. Reservations at greenparkinn.com. Just 4 in 10 taxpayers can reach a real person on the IRS toll-free helpline. Many blame steep congressional budget cuts over the past 5 years. And so, on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, Diane and her guests will talk about what's behind declining customer service at the Internal Revenue Service. That's upcoming, and we're coming right back in just a minute.
This week on Morning Edition, you heard President Obama make his case for an Iranian nuclear deal.
This is an important first step that we've taken. We have a political framework and an understanding, but the devil's in the details.
Every morning, we talk with people who help you put the news in context. Listen to the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
You can hear Morning Edition from 5 until 9 here on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking today with Quentin Williams, who is the founder and the CEO of the Dedication to Community Tour. You can get more information, because this is open to the public, by the way, at UNC Charlotte on Friday. And you can get information about that on the, at dedicationtocommunity.com or on our website at WFAE.org. Ronaldo Wynn is also with us from Game for Life. Before I introduce our next guest, I said at the very beginning, if you don't have a dream, you will never achieve that dream. And you say, Quentin, that you should dream bigger than your biggest dream. Sometimes people who dream dreams and try to achieve them fail, and that's a really tough thing to go through. If you dream bigger than your biggest dream and you fail, does that make it worse? Or does it actually maybe help you achieve the real dream that you have because you're trying to overshoot it?
I think there's success in failure. I think you learn in the process of failure, you learn what to do, what not to do in order to succeed. And I think it's also important to not only dream, but to have a strategy to achieve the dream.
Mm.
Because as Herman Edwards said, a dream without a plan is just a wish. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't want to get caught up in that situation. You want to be able to execute your dream.
So this is another example of something they didn't teach me this in school, so I don't think they teach it in school yet. How do you develop a strategy to achieve your dream, and how do you know your strategy is a good one? How do you know?
That's where having the right people around you helps out, because we're not born with that knowledge. We have to look to the people who came before us, who've done it before us, to lead us in some way. And again, it gets back to why I'm bringing my friends together. These industry experts have been there and done it. And so they can impart knowledge about their journey, about their successes and failures, how they did it. And it's relatable to the audience. The audience can look at them and say, you know what? I'm going to be just like you. I see myself in you. And I want to know how you did it so that I can do it in a similar way. It might not fit exactly the way I want to get it done, but at least I can learn from you. So there's a couple of components. You have to dream big. Let's start there. You have to have an idea, but you have to know how to execute that idea. And by having the right people around you, that is essential in the execution of that plan.
Let's bring Victor Mack into this conversation and add an educator's perspective on what we've been talking about. Dr. Victor Mack is director of the Office of Educational Outreach at UNC Charlotte, where the Dedication to Community D2C tour will be in residence on Friday. Why is the university bringing this event to its campus?
The university is a strong supporter of community engagement. As a matter of fact, it actually has community engagement as a strong component within its mission statement. Needless to say, my particular position is responsible for numerous engagements within our College of Education and also our broader university. If we go back as far as to the early 19th century, as far as that's concerned, early 20th century, really, John Dewey, W.E.B. Du Bois, and numerous others also made mention of the fact that, as you made mention of earlier, the importance of social capital within education. It's not just curriculum instruction, and unfortunately, that's what we see a lot of media actually focus on is just that curriculum instruction, testing, things of that sort and so forth. And I think it's very important that especially the university and this role within the community, that it does stress that community engagement piece, that we do reinforce the fact that education is primarily social and how we connect with one another. And so I was, needless to say, very happy that you brought up the social capital piece.
Well, you know, we've done a lot of shows on social capital because Charlotte ranks very low on social capital for whatever reason, and it's something that we have had trouble, I think, correcting. But people look people don't see the impact of social capital, particularly if they don't understand that it exists or how it works. But there's a reason that people who graduate from Harvard and Yale succeed. True. Not just because they're smart and they went to a great school. It's because of the social networks that they made while they were there. Mm-hmm. How do you make those social how do you create those networks if you aren't of that echelon?
Well, and I think what the common thread here is, and Ronaldo spoke to it early when he spoke about his coach, and I think each one of us can also speak to that favorite teacher that was impactful in our lives and whatnot. And I think those were the early beginnings outside of our parents and their role as far as their influence in our upbringing and our education and our nurturing and so forth as far as that's concerned. We start to make those external connections through those teachers, through those coaches, through those mentors that Q is also assisting with making accessible tomorrow as far as through this event. And this is an effort to more or less broaden those opportunities for those that may not necessarily have those particular opportunities.
This is a one-day event, and we've talked about the fact that they will present a lot of information that you don't learn in school.
Sure.
How do you expect students, and it's open to the public, students and others, to really be able to grasp all this and apply it in a one-day setting?
I think the key here, and we kind of touched on this also earlier, is that each one of these people, even though you'll see them on the panel and you'll see what they may believe or perceive as instant success, that's not the case. And I think they'll share stories in which they had troubling times, where they had obstacles and instances in which they were able to be able to overcome those particular obstacles and try once again to achieve those dreams. And thus the theme for the particular event, Empowering Dreams, Realizing the Future. I think being able to see someone and be able to have a conversation with them about those challenges, and once again seeing that, okay, all right, they're not that much different from me. It's just that I'm 20 years behind them.
Yeah, and they'll be, as you said, they'll be able to have conversations during the event, but those conversations could easily continue because you have gotten all of the panelists, Quentin, to agree to be mentors to the people at this event.
The great thing about this is that all these industry experts, these panelists, are going to continue to have an ongoing relationship through D2C with the venue and with the audiences. So if somebody wants to reach out to Ronaldo, they're interested in the racing industry, they'll get in touch with Dr. Mack, and Dr. Mack will then, now he knows Ronaldo, he'll call Ronaldo up and say, hey, you know, do you have time just to speak to this person?
You're building your social network.
Right. You know, UNC Charlotte has a racing curriculum on their campus. So now does Ronaldo come back to the campus and present maybe and speak to the audiences there? Yeah, of course. Does he bring some of his friends from Joe Gibbs? Of course. It's bigger than just a one-off one-day event. That's the great thing about it. You know, the one thing I want to make mention about is this is for people from 8 to 80 plus. I had, at the first event we did at Seton Hall University, there was a gentleman who came up on stage afterwards with tears streaming down his cheeks. And I didn't know much about why, but he said, you guys just made such a huge impact on me. And I said, well, that's great. I hugged him and he left. I found out later that the director of admissions from my law school brought him there. And on the way back home, they drove together. On the way back home, he was crying to her. He said, What this event did to me was it gave me courage. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to go pitch a department store. He was an entrepreneur for 50 years in the hair care business. He said, I'm going to go pitch department stores. I've just been selling to boutiques. And he was very successful doing it. He pitched a department store, a named department store, the next week and got it. This is an 80-year-old man who has been in the hair care industry for 50 years and still had learning to do. He had some learning to do, and he needed just a little bit of a push. And somebody on stage said something that inspired him to change his life at 80 years old. That, to me, was profound. It told me, okay, we're on to something here. We're doing something bigger than we even thought. We're dreaming. We're hitting a bigger dream than we even dreamed.
You also talk about there's a difference between doing well and doing good. I guess that is the greater good that you're talking about there, the society's greater good. How does that figure into all of this? If you're so, I mean, obviously you want to be a success in life. You want to find ways to pull yourself out of whatever situation you're in now, even if you're in a great situation, but you want to get to another place. How does that figure into that journey?
I have a lot of people who in my circle who have done very good things in their life in business, been extremely successful, but they're unfulfilled. They're doing well for themselves, doing well for them, their families, but they're not doing good for society. So we made a determination to bring in people who understood the balance between doing well and doing good and understood that those two things are not mutually exclusive. The people I know who are doing really well and not doing good, they think they're doing well and good. They don't have balance in their life. They don't understand. They think that it's mutually exclusive. To make a lot of money, you have to make a lot of money, and that's it. But there is a balance. And I spoke to somebody, one of the guys who's on one of our panels, he told me, you know what? When my boss, who runs his company, started to do good, at a very high level, he noticed that he started to do better from a business standpoint. Things started to happen that weren't happening before at a higher level. He was doing good for society, and it was paying him back in spades. He didn't even understand why. Mm-hmm. But there is a formula to this. The more you give, the more you get.
Is it because in the process of doing good, in giving back, you are building a different kind of network of people who then support you in your other efforts?
Yes. And when it's done genuinely, people see that for what it is.
I guess Joe Gibbs is an example of this because he's a football coach. He owns a racing team. He doesn't have to do game plan for life thing. Why did he hire you to run it?
For the exact same reason that Q just talked about. Been fortunate enough to play for Coach 3 of my 13 years in the NFL, and now being able to work for him on the racing side and then also with the ministry side. And the one quote that has carried throughout his career is that you win with people. He's been able to win 3 Super Bowls and also 3 NASCAR championships and will be in both Hall of Fames, which nobody has ever been in 2 different sports, because he understands the relationships. He says that at the end of the day, the wins, the championships – that's not going to matter. It's going to be the type of influence that you have on others. And that's essentially is what D2C is talking about, is having the impact on other people, the relationships that you have.
But you talk to at-risk young people, but you also talk to people who the risk is behind them now because, as you say, they're in jail and they're not getting out ever.
Right.
So how does that help either society or Joe Gibbs? They're in jail. They're not getting out.
Well, Coach loves talking into the prisons. I mean, he has a joy when he goes in there. Those guys are keyed on Coach whenever he talks, and he's so just down to earth. And the one thing he talks about, he shares his story, he shares his faith, and he talks about the story of David, how, hey, David made a lot of mistakes. He was a murderer. He was an adulteress. I mean, all those things, but still God gave him a second chance. And even for those guys that may not be getting out, we believe that God's given them a purpose, even while they are. And we've seen the impact of some of those guys that have taken that by the horns and are now in prison, making an impact on some of those young guys that are coming in there. And they feel like they do have a purpose in life.
There are a lot of people who don't dream big dreams because they don't think it's possible to achieve them, because they look around them and nobody has achieved anything. I just lost my pen across the desk. Nobody has achieved anything, and it's not their fault. They have no role models. Is that what you're starting here in a way? Even for people who have a modicum of success, you're providing them role models to have greater success.
Exactly. Well, that's what these industry experts, they serve as role models. We're also honoring two people who are incredible role models. Thomas Davis, who was voted the NFL's Walter Payton Man of the Year, is being honored on Friday by us. And he's an NFL player with the Carolina Panthers, blew out his knee three times. Now, I've been around football for a long time. I've never seen somebody blow out their knee twice and come back with the kind of vigor he's come back to be a leader on the field and off the field. He's done it three times. And then Joan Higginbotham, who is a retired NASA astronaut, one of only three African-American women to orbit the Earth, is, and she's a Charlotte resident, mm-hmm. She's going to be honored. We're honoring them to show the audience that, hey, listen, you can achieve whatever you want to. Joan Higginbotham, nobody looked like her when they were going into space. And she achieved something that very few people have achieved. We're giving her our Leadership and Inspiration Award, and we're giving Thomas Davis our Doing Good and Doing Well Award.
You talk about success, but to you, success, what I'm gathering here, is more than simply being successful in your field and making a lot of money. How would you define success?
Success is doing something you love to do, doing something for society that is substantial, and being a good person. And if you do that, I think your legacy is set.
What do you hope people will, and your students at UNC Charlotte will take away from this experience tomorrow at the university, Dr. Mack?
That successful people have been where they are and whatnot at that particular juncture within their lives as they attend tomorrow's function. That education and we'll just say curriculum instruction is only a small piece of the puzzle. Making those connections, being able to see successful people that have achieved and overcome obstacles and that they can take that inspiration from those individuals and be able to apply it to their individual lives.
Dr. Victor Mack is director of the Office of Educational Outreach at UNC Charlotte. Ronaldo Wynn is executive director of Game Plan for Life, and he will be a participant tomorrow in this one-day event at UNC Charlotte, about which that you can get you can get information on our website or at dedicationtocommunity.com. It's part of the Dedication to Community Tour, of which Quentin Williams is the founder and CEO. Thank you all for the hour.
Thank you
very
much.
It's been a pleasure.
Charlotte Talks with